our home on the internet.
PTPintcast.com.
Created by BuildPT. BuildPT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what BuildPT can do for you today
at BuildPT.com.
Spring is in the air, and it's the season for growth and new experiences in your career. Explore the country with rewarding travel assignments through Arias Medical Group. Know a PT? Make a referral and earn up to $1,000. To learn more, call 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's AUREUSmedical.com.
This is the PT Pintcast. Podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
Our next guest is the Director of Spinal Cord Injury Research and the Director of the Hulse Spinal Injury Laboratory at the Shepherd Center in Atlanta, Georgia. She leads a team dedicated to improving motor function in persons with spinal cord injuries through the development of rehabilitation approaches informed by the latest neuroscience research. Her contributions to the spinal cord injury literature include the largest study to date of locomotor training for persons with chronic motor incomplete spinal cord injuries and the first ever study of a rehabilitation intervention to promote neuroplasticity for improved hand function in persons with tetraplegia. Her research has been funded by the National Institutes of Health since 1997 and also by the National Institute on Independent Living, Disability and Rehabilitation Research, and the Department of Defense. She is the editor and author of the textbook Spinal Cord Injury Rehabilitation. She currently serves as editor-in-chief of the Journal of Neurologic Physical Therapy and as the project director of the Southeastern Regional Spinal Cord Injury Model System. Up next in the PT Pintcast, Eddie Field-Fote. Eddie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Jimmy.
Glad to have you on there. I know more than a couple of my classmates before we graduated from PT school would talk about the Shepherd Center and speak really highly of it and just kind of keep an eye on what was coming out of there. So it's very exciting to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm really happy to have the chance to talk to you.
So where do we want to start? We were just talking before we hit the record button about something that is coming up. So why don't we give a plug to that? The Foundation for Physical Therapy is something that is pretty near and dear to your heart. That event, their big fundraising event, I know I participated as a student for 3 years, is coming up at the next convention, which is coming up in June in Boston. So talk a little bit about what the foundation means to you.
Well, the foundation funded my very first research grant, and it was a grant that I had submitted as a PhD student, and I actually at that time was doing research on spinal cord turtles, and I was actually studying scratching behavior in spinal cord turtles, and the foundation had the wisdom to see how it might apply to people with spinal cord injury, and they provided some funding to help me when I was in my doctoral studies.
And that led to sparking your career a little bit right there, right?
I mean, it's a foot in the door, so to speak. Once
right.
You can show that your peers who review grants believe that your research has potential, that leads others who might be evaluating your work to think, well, someone believed in them and gave them a start. Who are we to disagree?
Gives you a little bit of street cred.
That's exactly right.
All right, so hold on. You got to go back a little bit. Scratching behavior in turtles. What is even scratching behavior, and how does that apply somehow to spinal cord injuries?
Well, I'm glad you asked. There are these circuits in the spinal cord, even though that people typically think of the spinal cord as just a conduit between the brain and the muscles. The spinal cord actually has these very sophisticated circuits that can produce very elegant behaviors without any input from the brain. And so one of those behaviors happens to be scratching behavior. So if you take an experimental animal and you anesthetize it and you cut the spinal cord, you can study the types of behaviors that the spinal cord can generate without any input from the brain. And it generates behaviors beyond scratching that include things like walking and flying in the case of birds or undulation in the case of the snake. And those behaviors are all related in that they're produced by spinal circuits that are much more sophisticated than simple reflexes.
Now, it's been a little while, but is that like some like central pattern generators?
That's exactly what it is.
Look at that. I was paying attention in class.
Yeah, you got the lingo. That's exactly what it is.
How did you put two and two together? I mean, that's pretty much a leap right there.
In my doctoral studies, what I showed was that the patterns of scratching are very similar to patterns of swimming. So if you can get the animal to scratch on both sides at the same time, the patterns limb movement that they produce during this bilateral scratching behavior are very similar to the patterns that are produced during swimming behavior. And so from that, it's not a far difference from walking behavior. My real life as a physical therapist researcher, I applied what I learned in turtles to walking in people with spinal cord injury.
And where did that research take you?
I directed the Rehabilitation Research Laboratory at the Miami Project to Cure Paralysis for 20 years before joining the Shepherd Center.
That's great. Well, kudos on you for being able to take that leap, and kudos for the foundation for recognizing and, well, I guess just being there for when someone does come up with a leap between turtle scratching and spinal cord injuries.
Yes, I agree. But I can tell you that sometimes these days it's very difficult when I hear the discussion of CPGs related to clinical practice guidelines. Really hard for me to wrap my head around that.
Same letter, same acronym, but completely different meaning.
Right, exactly.
So talk a little bit about your work at the Shepherd Center. You guys are pretty much one of the leaders in the field in the field of spinal cord injury. Where are we now? Because a lot of things will come across, and they'll come across in the wrong way, and almost in the fake news way. You see a lot of things coming up your Facebook feed a lot saying we've figured out spinal cord injury. We're done. We've got it. Put it to bed. I don't think that's exactly the case. Am I right?
You are so right. I'm so glad that you recognize that, Jimmy, because it seems that the things that get the most attention are the things that seem most dramatic and sexy. But unfortunately, there's very few of those, at least to date, that have panned out to really make a difference in the lives of people with spinal cord injury. And in fact, there was a recent systematic review that looked at all the different types of experimental procedures for people with spinal cord injury. And what the evidence indicates is that the best evidence is for interventions that either are rehabilitation or include rehabilitation as part of a combined therapy. And so the work in my lab really is trying to identify how we can make therapy more effective. And one of the things that we know is that therapy and practice and training that is really task specific, molded in a way that really is intended to produce behaviors that are functional for people, that leads to changes in the nervous system. And with practice and training, like anything else, people with spinal cord injury can become better at those behaviors. But interestingly enough, the circuits that are activated by training can also be activated by things that we have in our toolbox as physical therapists, things like stimulation and vibration. And so we're doing some studies now where we're augmenting rehabilitation and practice and training with brain stimulation and spinal cord stimulation and vibration to see if we can make training outcomes more effective.
Where are we right now? What are we trying to wrap our heads around and saying the most effective? Oh, is that even a fair question, just because each spinal cord injury is going to be vastly different from each other?
Yeah, it's true. Spinal cord injury is highly variable depending on things like the level of injury, the severity of injury. But what we know, or at least one of the things that I think is most exciting, is that there's evidence that as people improve their function, one of the ways that function improves is that the brain is able to send more information down through the pathways that remain in the spinal cord. And so that gives us a tool to see if there are things that we can do to make the brain more effective at sending information down those remaining pathways. So it's kind of like, you know, you have a hose that you know has damage to it, but you can still move water through it. How can you get that hose to carry more water so that more of that water gets to where you want it to go, which is the motor neurons?
Right. Yeah, but you brought up the sexy things that make the BuzzFeed articles and wind up on everybody's Facebook feed. It's all about the robotics or the newest and craziest idea in terms of either stem cell injection or surgical interventions. But it's good to hear from someone within the research is that, you know, rehabilitation is or is at least a part of the best method to go forward.
Absolutely. One of the things that I find most encouraging is that there are some studies that, well, have at this point just been done in animal models where they are transplanting biological agents into the spinal cord with the hope of improving the ability of the spinal cord to transmit that information. And what they're finding is that they are effective if they combine it with training. And so, for example, if they combine it with upper extremity training, they improve their upper extremity function, but they don't walk better. But if they combine it with locomotor training, they walk better, even though their upper extremity function might not be better. So that task specificity of training, we're seeing it even in animal models of spinal cord injury.
Yeah, we had a guy on the show not long ago, Andrew Guccione, who works out at George Mason and PhD program. He's saying, you know, he kind of treats his students and says, if walking was your Olympic event, how would you train your spinal cord injury patient? And let's train them like that. So it sounds like, you know, those two ideas, the one you're saying and the one he's saying, are pretty much hand in hand.
Yes, absolutely.
So you did a sabbatical in Barcelona, Spain. I'll stop right there. We'll get into what you got there, but how is Spain?
Spain is wonderful, and the people there are lovely, and it was a great time. My entire family went. So it was a seminal time in our lives. My son was in just going into middle school at that time, and my husband came with me as well, and he ran his business from there in Spain, and I had the opportunity to work with a wonderful group of researchers and clinicians in Barcelona who are at a center that's very much like Shepherd Center. And mm-hmm. my experience there was actually one of the reasons that I decided when Shepherd called me that I would take them up on that offer this time. It was the third time they asked, and third time's a charm.
So what's different about it? What did you see in the place in Spain, and what did you see in Shepherd that actually made you really want to go there and look forward to it?
I'm an academician, you know, so my goal in life as a PhD student was to become a tenured full professor. So I got that, and I started thinking about, well, what do I really want in terms of the impact that I can have on the lives of people with spinal cord injury? Because what I was seeing was that despite my 20 years of research in a research institution, the Miami Project Trachea Paralysis, which is a premier research institution, I wasn't seeing the interventions that I was developing in the lab being used in the clinical setting. And that was one of my motivations for going to the Gutmann Institute in Barcelona. They had a wonderful clinical team that was really trying to apply what had been developed in the lab in the clinical setting. When I came back from sabbatical and had the opportunity to talk with my colleagues at Shepherd Center, that's really what they were looking for there as well. And so it was one of those things where the timing was just right. And I really believed when talking to the people that I met when I visited Shepherd Center that they were sincere about applying the outcomes of research into clinical practice.
Why doesn't that happen more?
Oh, there are so many reasons. You know,
I got a lot of tape. We can keep recording. Look, go ahead.
A lot of it has to do with just the reimbursement structure. The way a therapy is reimbursed, there's really no incentive to try something different and something new. There's actually a disincentive that drives people to kind of do what they've always done and not try something different, even if the evidence suggests that it might be valuable. I also think that part of what happens in research is that it seems inaccessible to people who don't know the person and hasn't really talked to the person who's actually generating the outcomes of the research. So it seems very mysterious. You know, those papers are sometimes hard to read. Seems like, oh, I can never get that equipment. So one of the great things that I think is happening in the world of research these days is the rise of pragmatic clinical trials, where there's a recognition that the real world is not like a randomized clinical trial where everything's mm-hmm. very tightly controlled and you just do this intervention. And so I'm very heartened to see that pragmatic trials are gaining acceptance and that funding agencies are more and more interested in that kind of approach to answering questions that are valuable for people with all different types of impairments and disabilities.
I see one disconnect too as a new PT, somebody who just graduated less than a year ago, being in class and being around professors who were able to access, you know, the latest research and pass it on to us. And we were able to look up anything we wanted because we had access through the university's databases. It was fantastic. And then you graduate, and besides having to pay back your loans, which just absolutely awful by the way, you lose access to all that research. So you wind up asking your colleagues, which is a fantastic way to do it. But they typically have been doing what they've been doing in the clinic that I've seen for a while now, and maybe they don't have access either. So it's kind of like a vicious cycle.
I mean, I do believe that the ABTA is doing outstanding work in trying to make research more accessible. I mean, the things that you see on PT Now in terms of helping to distill down the evidence in a way that can really be immediately applied in the clinical setting is really, I mean, a game changer, I believe.
Now, when you use that term pragmatic clinical trial, is it different from the get-go? Is it more sensible going into the creation of the trial because they want to make sure whatever comes out of it is going to be accessible more easily put into practice right away?
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it. So the idea of a pragmatic trial is that, well, I should say that there's a spectrum. There's a spectrum from the regular randomized clinical trial, which is intended to explain, to understand the mechanism. Pragmatic clinical trials are not intended to explain a mechanism. They're intended to understand what gives the outcomes you're interested in clinical, okay, in the real world of clinical practice. So, but there is a spectrum. So some of the things that we think of when we think of a randomized clinical trial is masking of the assessors. And to some extent, you want masking of assessors even in a pragmatic trial. Things like randomization. There are some pragmatic trials where people are randomized. Often what happens is you have multiple sites involved, and the randomization is by the site. Like, this site does one thing and the other site does something different. So it's a spectrum. But the intent is, one of the main things I think that makes it more applicable is that there is an attempt to try and include as many people for whom the intervention would be useful as possible. So rather than saying, well, you're excluded if you have this history or you have this comorbidity. So there's more of an attempt to try and have the people who are the participants in the trial represent the real world population of the individuals who you're trying to help.
Yeah, it seems more like what you're saying. I'm just going to try to translate because I'm by no means ever pretending to be a research guy. you're less trying to find out the why and more the how of getting A to B. Is that kind of like...
That's a really good way to look at it. Yes.
Okay. Jimmy, that's a good We'd all love to know the why, but a lot of times when you find out the why, like, how am I going to apply that why to my patient who's sitting there in front of me? But if you're telling me if you do A with B patient, you'll get C, okay, I can put that into practice right away.
Yes, and then we can go back later and try to figure out what the mechanism is.
Right, you know? Right. Absolutely, absolutely, yes. I like that very much. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hit you with three questions, and we'll talk a little bit more about things coming down the line, the future of what spinal cord injury is and rehabilitation is from the Shepherd Center on the other side of the break with the PT Pinecast.
Working out his orbicularis oris until failure. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pinecast.
Spring is in the air. It's the season for growth and new experiences in your physical therapy career. Explore the country with healthcare staffing agency Aureus Medical Group. You'll find rewarding travel and full-time career opportunities nationwide. Know a PT? Make a referral and earn up to $1,000. To speak with a recruiter, call 1-800-340-2619 or visit aureusmedical.com. That's A-U-R-E-U-S medical.com.
Rocktape, more than just a tape company. Rocktape keeps athletes of all levels moving stronger, longer.
With the world's best kinesiology tape,
topical pain relief,
mobility equipment,
and protective gear.
And now physical therapists can get 20% off their first purchase right now at shop.rocktape.com.
Just use the code PTPINECAST at checkout to get 20% off.
That's shop.rocktape.com.
With the code PTPINECAST for killer savings of 20% off.
Rocktape, the world's best kinesiology tape.
Let's give a nice, warm welcome to...
We're back. It's so great to see you. Let's get back to the show now. All right, we're back in the PT Pinecast with Eddie Field Fote, and we are talking three questions right now. You're going to be on the hot seat for just a minute, if that's okay.
Okay.
From our friends at Aureus Medical Staffing. First question, if you could go anywhere in the U.S. and be a PT for a little while, like think of it as a sabbatical here in the U.S., where would it be?
Well, if I was going to work clinically, I'd be very interested in collaborating with my colleagues up at Brown University who are doing some really amazing things in terms of health services research. And I'd like to be someone who's delivering care as part of the trials that they're doing, where they're really trying to figure out the answers to questions related to how delivery of care really makes a difference for the people who are our patients.
Man, you are an academic right there. I give you carte blanche. You go anywhere. All right. Well, Rhode Island is a nice area. Nice time in the summer, too. Second question on three questions. What's something that you've read recently that really inspired you? It could be PT research. It could be non-PT research related, whatever you want.
So I've been reading recently about Tesla and how he developed his ideas in terms of electricity. And, you know, when many people believe that he didn't get the credit he deserved.
Yeah. He invented radio.
Yeah, you're right. He's one of our unsung heroes in terms of his scientific contributions.
Yeah, coming from a field of broadcasting, everybody thinks it's Marconi, but Tesla was actually the guy that should have had credit for it.
There's a lot of things he should have had credit for.
Yeah. Third question, who's somebody in the field of physical therapy that the audience should know more about?
I would have to say Barbara Norton at Washington University in St. Louis. She was really behind the whole move toward the movement system and really having us think about how that really is the underpinnings of our profession in every way. When we think about it, our interventions are movement related, our outcomes are movement related, and so it really encompasses everything that we do as a profession, the movement system. And I think Barbara is one of those very quiet leaders who is known in some circles, but not nearly as widely as she might be and deserves to be.
All right. I like that. All right. So you're off the hot seat for three questions right now. You survived.
Thank you. Wow. I was sweating over here.
All right. Soon it will be time to party like it's 1773. We're putting a non-traditional twist on an event that you've been hosting for a long time. So no pressure. I'll be holding the microphone this year. It's the Boston PT Party. Play on words, because we're going to Boston for the next convention, Thursday, June 22nd at the Boston Waterfront, the Foundation for Physical Therapy, the gala event, Mingle Network, and all the money going to go to the good cause, which is founding PT research. I mean, I mentioned before, I partook in some fundraising events, my 3 years in PT school. You always want to make sure your PT school is on the list to make sure you're helping to fundraise. Give people a little bit of insight of what the gala is actually like.
So the gala has been kind of like the big ball of the physical therapy profession, and it'll continue to be that way. But this year we're going to go a little more cash, and it's going to be just a really fun event there in Boston. We're going to, as you mentioned, pick up on the theme of the tea party, the Boston PT Party, and there's going to be some amazing announcements made during the event. And so I encourage everyone to get there and don't miss out.
I like it a lot. You can find out more information about it. Maybe grab your tickets. Maybe if you're a company out there, you want to sponsor yourself a table or help out the event, check out foundation4pt.org. That's foundation, the number 4, pt.org. And I'll actually be, I like how you said it's going to be super casual. We really dialed back the fanciness because I'm hosting. That's kind of why they had to dial back the casual. So looking forward to that. Again, it's on June 22nd during the next convention. And I'm pumped. I'm ready to go. I'm just going to give you a little teaser. I might have several outfit changes.
Oh, wow.
I'll just tip my hand.
I'll have to see if I can keep up with you then.
So at the Shepherd Center in Atlanta, physical therapy, spinal cord injury research, also editor-in-chief of the Journal of Neurologic Physical Therapy. I mean, you're at the forefront getting all of the research as it comes in, before it goes into the journal, months before it comes into the journal, I'm assuming. What's coming down the line? What are some things or directions that the research is going in that you can kind of give us a little bit of a teaser for?
So we actually have a special issue coming up. In the July issue, it's going to be management of complex neurological disorders. It's really heavy into case studies where can be immediately apparent to the reader how the articles apply in the clinical setting. It will offer ideas for how you can do a research study if you work with a population that is underserved or considered an orphaned population, to be able to get the word out about interventions that you have tried that are effective for people who might be, as I say, underserved with neurological disorders.
Yeah, it seems like that's like the best way to get the rubber to meet the road, the research to actually get to the patient in the clinic, is to put it in, you know, real case study format.
It really emphasizes how the clinician examined the patient and brought those findings together in evaluation to come up with the diagnosis, how that diagnosis led them to identify the most appropriate intervention, and then track the changes using outcome measures that are best suited for measuring the outcomes of therapy.
Anything else? Any of the directions that spinal cord injury research might be going in, something maybe non-traditional?
I kind of alluded to this before in that I think that people sometimes, when you think about spinal cord injury, it might seem unusual that you would focus your research on the brain, because the brain's not injured in spinal cord injury. Well, you can have both, but with a dual diagnosis. But by focusing on the brain and making the brain more effective, you can actually improve function in both the legs and in the arms, because you can actually get the spinal cord to transmit a larger amount of information between the brain and the spinal cord, even though you haven't changed the spinal cord itself.
Right.
So
how would you do that? How would you focus on the brain?
Oh, so you can use non-invasive forms of brain stimulation. And in fact, depending on the practice act in your state, physical therapists have access to Pheresis units, which we have used traditionally for iontophoresis for many, many years. Lots of clinics have them stuck in the back of their closet. There's good evidence that by using the anodal polarity over the motor cortex, you can actually improve upper extremity function. It's been shown in people with stroke, and we've shown it in people with spinal cord injury.
That's cool. I guess I never thought about that. Why would you treat the brain if the spinal cord is actually the part of the body that's been injured? But, you know, using your analogy with the water and the hose, if the hose is damaged, what if you could change the pump?
Right. It's exactly right. I'm not making a recommendation, but these devices are so low tech that you can actually build one yourself. We have students here at Georgia Tech who are building their own with a 9-volt battery and using them for their math test.
Wow. Excellent. Looking forward to some more things coming out in the field, and expect good things, especially out of the Shepherd Center and, of course, coming across your desk at the Journal.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Every episode that we record is a pint, but before we're done with the pint, we do shots. It's tradition.
Okay.
This is the parting shot.
Powered by Optum, Optum offers weekend courses that are Monday morning applicable, utilizing approaches that make sense.
They promote excellence in hands-on treatment, exercise prescription, pain science, and clinical reasoning, offering a COMT,
as well as an APTA-accredited fellowship in orthopedic manual therapy, both online and in-person mentoring, with locations in Houston, Dallas, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Find out more online
at optumfellowship.com.
Parting shot of wisdom. What's one little tidbit of wisdom in the field of spinal cord injury rehabilitation that you might want to leave with the audience?
Believe in the power of rehabilitation, practice, and training. You change the brain, you change the nervous system, and you can make a meaningful difference in the life of people with spinal cord injury.
Short, sweet, and to the point. Appreciate you taking your time out to talk to us, and I hope it's not the last time. I know it won't be the last time, because I'm crashing that party in Boston, so I'm looking forward to it, and we'll have a good time up there with the Boston PT party.
Sounds good. See you on the dance floor.
The PT Pintcast is a product of PT Pintcast, LLC.
It is hosted and produced by PT Pintcast CEO Jimmy McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it.
This has been another pour from the PT Pintcast.
The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.
Effective clinical practice is grounded in effective research.
And that is what the Foundation for Physical Therapy does.
For over 35 years now, the Foundation for Physical Therapy has made it its mission to fund and publicize physical therapy research. Their researchers have helped introduce movement in babies with cerebral palsy,
integrate dancing to alleviate ailments in patients with Parkinson's,
and develop video games to implement physical rehabilitation. The work of their recipients would not be possible without the support of donors like you.
Your support can help us continue to elevate the physical therapy profession
and work towards creating a world
that thrives on mobility.
You have the power to make a difference.
Join the power of one
and contribute today at foundationforpt.org.
That's foundation, the number 4, pt.org.
Donate today and experience the power of one for the Foundation for Physical Therapy.
Online at foundation, the number 4, pt.org.